Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. Our email address is afternoon@newstalk.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter. And just to remind you, this day week, next Friday, April the 19th, we'll be having our next Movies and Booze outside broadcast in the Strand Hotel in Limerick, with thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer's. Bit of chat, bit of music, and of course, Movies and Booze. That's this day week in the Strand Hotel in Limerick. So if you, I don't know if there's any places left, but you can always check it out. If you would like to be in the audience, you go to newstalk.com/events. newstalk.com/events. We are joined in the studio by Olivia Fahey, Fionnuala Jones and Dean McGuinness. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi guys. Hello.
And for those of you who are fans of craft beers, you can start sending in your complaints now. Because in a shock development, Dean McGuinness is going to drink Carlsberg and Coors Light. Not once, but twice. But a thing I didn't know, Dean, that you can buy Carlsberg, but there's also imported Carlsberg.
Yeah, what you've got is the appointed distributor for Carlsberg in Ireland is Diageo Guinness. And in the UK, it's brewed by Carlsberg Marston. So in Ireland, it's brewed under the supervision of Carlsberg by Diageo. In the UK, it is brewed by Marston's, which is a Carlsberg brewery. The UK Carlsberg is 3.5% ABV. The Irish Carlsberg is 4.3% ABV.
Right. Okay. Significant difference there.
We'll be tasting also Coors Light, and the UK version of that is 4.0% ABV, and the Irish version of it is 4.3% ABV as well.
Okay.
Now, I'm fairly sure that the Coors Light is brewed in the same brewery in the UK.
The Carlsberg?
The Coors Light and the Coors Light are both brewed in the same brewery in the UK. As in the 4.3% and the 4% version. The Irish Coors Light is distributed by Heineken. But there's a little bit of a difference in price. You're looking at about €1.75 for the Coors Light versus €1.95 to €2.54 for the Irish version.
It's cheaper. The imported version is cheaper from the UK.
From the UK, it's cheaper to bring it in, and it's going through a number of hands. It's €1.50 for the Carlsberg versus between €1.75 and €2.50 for the Irish version of the Carlsberg. Is a thing. But we
that's
will
as to the why of that, I suppose. No doubt, Dean will get into that later on. Shock original idea for a film is one of the two films we're going to be talking about this week, as Fionnuala will be telling us all the things that are being remade during the course of the next hour. I suppose Back to Black, I know it's an original movie, but everyone's going to have a biopic made about them at some point at this stage of the game.
Yeah, and this one almost feels a little bit too soon. It's a little bit undercooked, and there's a couple of things in there that I don't think is going to sit very well with fans. It certainly didn't sit well with me. So I'm basically going to be a bit of a Debbie Downer today, I think.
Okay. All right. Don't blame you. Is it? But it's one of those movies, a bit like the Michael Jackson movie we haven't seen, where people who were involved in our life are involved in, have some say in the production of it, and therefore might want to depict themselves in a totally bad light.
Yeah, no, I'm actually not so sure if her ex-husband Blake is actually involved in it, but one of the things that really kind of ticked me off is just how well he comes across in this. And yes, her family have been involved, so I would have thought that they would have maybe stepped in more if that wasn't the case, but also, when you're watching it, there's actual interviews from both Amy and Blake that contradict things that are then said in the film. So, it doesn't sit right.
No. Yeah. Okay. And I suppose the key thing will be the music itself. Now, this is who's the actor who plays her?
It's Marissa Abella. Yeah. So people may recognize her from Cobra, which is on Sky. So she is actually doing the singing herself.
Okay.
It's not Amy's vocals that you hear in the film, which I think may have been a mistake. They've gone the Rocketman sort of side of things, but Taron Egerton actually kind of sounded like Elton John, but also didn't, but it still worked. Whereas with this, it's definitely a lot more forced. You can tell that this is not how she sings naturally. And while in some way, some scenes, like she got it bang on the money when she is clearly singing live and it's live vocals in that moment. But when the kind of backing track sort of comes in and it's more of her, maybe not necessarily miming, but it's just what we hear is just the soundtrack version, it doesn't come across as well.
Yeah, it's I suppose it's a difficult decision. I can see why you might get the actor in question to sing, but at the same time, people have something to compare it to, and that's
for such an iconic voice. Like yeah. I would have said, go the Bob Marley, go the Bohemian Rhapsody route, and just have them mime.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah, and Civil War. Now, is this Alex Garland's last movie?
That's what he says. He kind of, even before the film came out, he started talking about how he was like, yeah, I've kind of fallen out of love of filmmaking, so I'm done. And everyone just kind of went, oh, well, that's not a great promo for the film.
Film, is it? Yeah. Sick of this. Here.
It's like, mic drop. Bye.
And it is about, this is one of your, this could happen in the United States very soon kind of scenarios.
Honest to God, that was one of the things that was like crossing my mind when watching this, is just kind of how close the US and probably other nations as well are to a bit of an uprising kind of going on. And it is almost terrifying in that sense that this could actually happen in some ways. But then again, it is just Hollywoodified. And then you go, oh, okay, yeah, this is still a film. We're fine.
Okay. Hmm. What's Kirsten Dunst been in?
She was in, was it The Power of the Dog?
Yes.
With Jesse Plemons,
yes,
and Benedict Cumberbatch.
And she was in something else more recently that's scratching my brain and I can't think of the name of it.
Okay, but I'm not wrong. She didn't like disappear for a while and then...
She kind of did, yeah. She took a step back from acting and things like that. And she's kind of like just getting back into the swing of things.
Ah, right.
Now.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. So, well, she probably just opted to do that.
Yeah.
Because she used to be in more things years ago.
Mm. Yeah, she was like one of like the noughties kind of it girls.
Yeah. Part of the reason why I remember that was on a previous edition of Movies and Booze many years ago. The movie reviewer that day went to say her name, but then committed a spoonerism. Yeah, it takes a minute to think about what that one is. Hence, just gulping laughter for the Rex Hour. Nobody could get a proper sentence out about anything.
Perfect.
Really. So be very careful.
I will.
when you say her name. Now, the Monopoly movie.
Yes.
Yes. There's a barrel. Let's knock through the bottom of it and see what we can find there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be Margot Robbie.
It's Margot Robbie's production company again. I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago I was talking about the fact that they're doing a movie adaptation of The Sims, again from Margot Robbie's production company, Lucky Chap, obviously just off the back of the success of Barbie. They're taking on the Monopoly movie. Lionsgate has developmental rights after buying it out from E1. I think that was the end of 2023. Like, most popular board game in the world, apparently 99% global awareness. So like, you'd have to go to, I don't know, far-flung places to try and find someone who doesn't know what Monopoly is. Mm. I know we're laughing. I know we're all having a laugh. But I think there's way more potential with this than The Sims one. Because, like, you obviously have all the board pieces. Like, who's going to play the thimble? You know what I mean?
So is that the thing? It's not people playing Monopoly. Well, it's about the actual Monopoly pieces.
Okay, so they're calling it live action, right? But I would imagine, like, I don't want a game about people playing, or I don't want a movie about people playing Monopoly. I want to know who Mr. Monopoly is. I want, what's his backstory?
No, but you could do something about the, you know, the cutthroat competitive world of international Monopoly playing.
Queen's Gambit meets Monopoly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You know,
I'm way more into, because I only just learned that the Monopoly man has an actual name. Do you know what his actual name is?
Tom?
Rich Uncle Pennybags. What's his backstory like? That's
okay.
You have a perfect villain arc there. The thimble, the dog, whatever the other pieces, they're all coming together with some other human, maybe played by Margot Robbie, I don't know, or some unidentified male actor, and they have to come together to take down this tyrant of property and wealth hoarding, you know?
Whose uncle is he?
Whose uncle is he?
Yeah.
You know?
Is the lion his nephew?
Potentially. Anyway, we have no idea about plot, but one of the fellas from Lionsgate has said that there's a clear point of view on the upcoming movie, which is
we have an
great
idea. Yeah.
Perfect, yeah.
Okay, and the trailer for Gladiator 2. Yes. Has been screened.
It has been screened.
Another stunning original idea. Yes.
Yeah, screened at CinemaCon. So I'd imagine we'll get it online in the next couple of days, week or so. But I'm here to describe it for you anyway, as there were lots of people at CinemaCon. Ridley Scott has called it even more extraordinary than the first. We're seeing Paul Mescal, who's obviously like the titular character in this film. He's facing off against a charging rhino at one point, a horde of vicious baboons, and Pedro Pascal, the three things you never want to come up against.
Okay. All at the same time? Is Pedro Pascal on the back of a baboon going, now, let's get him?
That I would like to see, but again, I don't think so. Pedro Pascal's character, he's like this kind of military man who's, he's kind of struggling with his job and the fact that he's sending all these young people in Rome off to war or whatever. In terms of who else is in it, we've got Denzel Washington, Joseph Quinn, people know from Stranger Things, Fred Hechinger from The White Lotus. We're getting this later this year, November 22nd. Watch this space for the trailer.
That's a good cast. But do we know what the gist of it is? Is it similar to the first film?
Is Paul Mescal now made to
be a gladiator?
Paul Mescal's like entering the arena as a nobleman. He's renounced his privilege and he finds himself in a life and death struggle for the amusement of the Roman people. So like it's kind of similar, yeah, essentially.
I just can't wait for the internet uproar if Paul kills Pedro or Pedro kills Paul, because it's just going to be like fandom war online.
Yeah, that would be hard.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll be friends or they'll have a, you know, they'll be care. Hugging and learning at the end of it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Is it going to be super violent?
I would say so. Yeah, that seems to be the general consensus from people who saw it at CinemaCon. Like, quite gory, quite violent.
Yeah.
But again, kind of what you'd expect from a Gladiator sequel. General consensus from that initial trailer viewing seems to be good, I will say so.
Okay, yeah. Peter says it's Mrs. Monopoly, actually. It was invented by a woman.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. So maybe there'll be a Mrs. Monopoly in it as well.
Maybe.
I've never seen Gladiator. Is it worth watching?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be blunt, yes. It's an iconic moment of cinema history that I think, I don't know, I'm still kind of like on the fence of, do we need a Gladiator 2? But I am still excited to see it, kind of thing.
Yeah, do we need an anything 2?
The only thing with this, I'm like, enough time has passed that I'm like, fair enough. And it's different people. So I'm like, okay, we'll see. I trust you, Ridley Scott. Maybe I shouldn't.
But it's almost like they're kind of, the calculation is they're waiting for a generation who you saw number one to get to have children, and then they're old and tired and they can't go to the cinema. And then so a new generation who aren't old and tired go out and go to see this film like it's the first time they've ever seen this thing.
So they're doing a Star Wars on it is what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. In relation to a Carlsberg alcohol content, I used to be a mystery shopper. And one of the jobs I had was to check supermarkets and off licenses to ensure that the retailer wasn't selling an import version of a lager, as the store shelves had been reserved and paid for by Diageo. Of the small sample I checked, 1/3 were selling the imported version for a greater profit and less percentage of alcohol, says Kevin. How interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, and someone else says, I have a question for your movie people. I read an article about Interstellar being screened for its 10th anniversary in IMAX cinemas. It wasn't clear whether this was in the UK or Ireland. Can you confirm it will be shown in Ireland? If your movie people don't know, can you please assign it as homework for next week? Says Carl.
I don't think we have official confirmation, but I think it'd be safe to assume like the Lighthouse or something will have it.
Yeah, because most of the time, if something is doing like a special return screening, it actually tends to go to the US first and then the UK, and then we'll hear about it in Ireland. So it's from what I've heard, it's TBC, but like there's no definite date or anything yet.
Yeah. It's September in the States, so September 27th, 2024, so maybe a little bit after that.
Yeah, maybe.
Was it such a great film that it merits this kind of re-release?
I like to watch it when I'm hungover to get a good sob out, you know? It's one of those films for me, which is probably not how Christopher Nolan intended it to
mine
be watched.
Mine is Sliding Doors.
Yeah, fair. Maybe that's a better choice.
Two very different films, yeah. Really. But like when you're lying there sobbing uncontrollably, looking at this, do you have any idea what the hell's going on?
No, not really.
No. Or just what anyone's saying. Half
so
the time.
Sad and he's in space. Like, yeah. It's just...
Oh, sad in space. Oh. Miserable astronaut boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, well, there you go. It's coming out. I hope that answers your question, Cahill, anyway. Right, so, listeners, I want you to imagine that this isn't Movies and Booze. We're all staggering around Temple Bar in a stag. because Dean McGuinness is going to start passing around glasses of Carlsberg. Yes. Carlsberg. Right. Oh. Okay. So
shockingly, we're on Coors Light first.
Oh, sure. Sorry. Coors Light.
Coors Light.
Even worse. No. Right. Okay. Coors Light.
On your left hand side is the 4% Coors Light.
Here. Yes.
So that's your right hand.
Okay,
side.
Okay. That one there. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. My other left. Yeah.
So that's the 4% Coors Light, and the.
Why is it
one.
Called Coors Light then?
Coors Light. Well, basically the. Calorie content of a typical 330ml bottle of beer is around 150 to 160 calories. About two-thirds of those calories are there because of the alcohol content. Mm. Alcohol has calories. With a beer, you would normally have a beer that isn't a light beer that would have the 150 to 160 calories. With the light beer, they're able to remove a lot of the 50 to 60 calories and bring it down to kind of around 100 to 110 calories. And that's classified as a light beer because it's lower in calories.
Right. Because people might think light means light in alcohol.
Yeah. And the thing about it is in the US, just to confuse things even more, Coors Light is 5%, I believe, or 4.7%.
Not so light. Yeah.
Sorry, it depends on the state. In some states, there are rules about selling beer above 4.7%, so they nudge the alcohol content of the beer below 4.7% in some states so that they can sell it in those states in supermarkets and then have the different ABVs in other supermarkets. So I'm not sure if Coors Light is one of those, but it can vary a bit.
Okay, right. So this first one that we're sipping, this is the native Irish one for
the 4% is the one that has come in from the UK, and the 4.3% is the one that is brewed in Ireland. Now, the way that flavour works in beer when you're talking about changing the ABV, what they're doing is usually with mainstream beers, they'll brew what's called high gravity beers. So they'll brew it to a higher strength and then dilute it down with water to get it to the exact strength that they want it to be. The reality is that when you move within 0.3%, 0.4%, you know, there's kind of specific ranges of beers. And when you move kind of 0.2%, 0.3%, 0.4%, your ability to perceive any difference within that range is very, very limited at certain points in the scale.
Mm.
So you could have a beer that's between 3.9% and 4.3% and you really won't be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
It tends then to change in flavour by kind of a notable amount when you kind of go along, and then it kind of comes to a levelling off again and it changes and levels off. So with these beers, I'll be perfectly honest, not trained to do true-to-type tasting on these beers. If you gave me these blind, I would not be able to tell the difference in them.
Me neither. Can anyone tell the difference between these?
I thought I was about to get in trouble because I couldn't.
Now, what you would have is you'd have quality controllers within the brewery that would be trained on true-to-type tests, and they would be tasting the beer again and again and again, literally multiple times a day to make sure that it's...
That's an actual job?
That's a job, yeah. And those people, they would be trained on specific off-flavours, and usually with these beers, they'd be focusing to see, is there a specific off-flavour? So does it taste buttery? Does it taste papery? Does it taste skunky? Even though skunky would be a little bit unfair, because there's every possibility that these beers could taste skunky now at this stage. They'd look for those flavours. Now, the thing about it is, you asked, you know, why was there a difference in price? First of all, if you think that the price of beer represents the cost of making the beer, that is largely true of craft beer. The cost of brewing craft beer is hugely different from the cost of brewing mainstream beer. The craft brewers employ about 7 to 8 times more employees per litre of beer that they produce than mainstream brewers do, because of a lot of it is automated and it's brewed in such huge batches. The cost of materials is anything from 2 to 4 times and higher for craft brewers, again, because they're purchasing in smaller quantities. So technically, the price typically of a case of beer in a mainstream brewer, it costs about €2 to brew it. Then you add the excise onto it, and then people start adding transport costs and margins onto it.
Mm.
Now, I need to emphasise, it is absolutely not illegal, I make sure I get this right, for Guinness and Heineken to charge whatever they want for their beer. They can charge whatever they want.
Okay.
So if they choose to charge a higher price in Ireland, they can charge a higher price. Now, we should have free movement of goods within the EU.
Yeah.
And then the theory would be, if this case of beer is being sold €12 per case cheaper in the UK, which it is, that somebody should be able to, well, UK is outside the EU, but again, we've got kind of bilateral agreements as well. Somebody should be able to buy that beer, bring it over, and there should be competition. And in theory, that should right the thing. At the moment, these beers are available at the price I mentioned. So the cheaper versions are 175 for the Coors, 150 for the Carlsberg, typically on the shelves. That might be changing around 1st of June. And the reason for that is these cans that we're drinking at the moment don't have the Return logo on them. So when you get to the 1st of June, they have to have the Return logo on them to be sold. So there's a possibility they might disappear at that
point. And the British manufacturers, as you were telling us before, will go, sell this, why would we bother? We're producing millions of cans of this stuff as it is.
Well, where they have exclusive agreements for somebody to distribute the beer, they can't block somebody from paralleling the beer into the country, but they can discourage it. So they can refuse to supply somebody in Ireland if somebody was to ask for the beer. So it has to be sold to somebody in the UK who sells it, somebody in Ireland who sells it to the retailer. Now, the cost of putting the logo onto the can would put somewhere between 20 and 60 cent per can onto the price of the can. It's a very expensive thing to hand put the logo on.
Yeah.
So either they'll disappear or they'll go up in price.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's little difference in flavour.
And at the moment, if you go into an off-licence or a supermarket, do they have to tell you this is a parallel beer? This isn't actually, or do you know what you're buying at all?
They do. There is labelling requirements. So by law, you need to have the ABV of the beer on the container of beer. Mm. The Coors Light, it said, like I'm looking at the cans, and I know that we're on radio, but you know, in terms of the branding of the cans, there's no difference. If you look at the ABV, the 4% one says it's 4%. The 4.3% one says it's 4.3%. You'd need to look quite carefully. The main way that people would notice the difference is the price. The 4.0% one says that it is brewed in Burton and Trent by Molson Coors. The 4.3% one is a little bit more vague. It says it's distributed by Heineken and brewed by MCBC.
Who are these mysterious MCBC?
Molson Coors Brewing Company. So it's obviously brewed by the same brewing group. Molson Coors is a huge group. It would be one of the larger of the Canadian breweries, but it's an international brewing group. So I can't verify exactly which of their breweries in the UK they'd be brewing it in, but the likelihood is they're brewing it in the same place.
Someone says Guinness cans in the UK 440ml, in Ireland 500ml.
Yeah, there was a kind of a thing where those 440ml cans weren't being brought into Ireland, and it seemed to be that what you have in the UK, that there has always been much more price competition in the UK. When Wetherspoons came into Ireland, there was a big furore between Wetherspoons and Heineken because they were paying a certain price in the UK and they wanted to be able to buy the beer for similar prices in Ireland, and the prices of the beer between the two countries can be radically different. So there was a big kind of hoo-ha where Wetherspoons were delisting Heineken products across almost 1,000 pubs in the UK because they couldn't get the deal in Ireland. So there's a lot of things. Ireland is a very closed country, and typically I spent a good bit of time in the UK. I was born in London, and when I was a kid I was over and back to the UK, and the prices of stuff in the UK, especially beers, are regularly much more suppressed than they are in Ireland. Now, we also have the minimum unit price. Legally, you can only bring the price of the 4.3% Coors down to a certain level. So you could sell the 4%, even if Heineken wanted to bring it down, they couldn't bring it down until they get to the level that is right. The 4.3%, the 4% could be sold at a lower price. But it should be, we don't have a lot of joined up thinking with our government, but it should be that if they want to control price, that they control it through minimum unit price legislation. That's the mechanism for it.
Someone says in Sweden, the strength of beer sold in supermarkets is weaker than the beer sold in the state off licenses and bars, which used to catch out a lot of my English workmates who couldn't understand why they got so drunk when they went out. Well, I think that's because they were drinking too much is probably the main reason for that. Someone says, Gladiator is a must-see, great movie. Russell Crowe has made some good movies, LA Confidential, The Shooter at the End, and American Gangster, The Raid in the Drug Factory at the end when they arrest Denzel. And though somebody else says Gladiator was a remake rip-off of The Fall of the Roman Empire, nothing original about it, says Chris. So now.
Well, if it's a historic film, surely that means by definition.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
There's not much you can do with that. You know. Sorry, Gladiators in space. Which sad movie do you want to do first?
I suppose I'll go Back to Black first.
Okay, Back to Black coming up after this.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You should be strong on gathering. You should be stronger than me. You should be stronger than me.
Okay, that's Back to Black. Interestingly enough, because, you know, you just explained to the listeners, you get on to the distribution company and say, can you have some clips? The only clips they provided us were of singing, not of... Usually, somebody makes a judgment that these are the best clips to... So obviously they feel that the singing part of this is a real strength of the movie. That didn't sound like Amy Winehouse to me. That sounded like an Amy Winehouse impersonator.
Yeah, and that clip itself is actually from early on in the film, which I do kind of feel it's almost a tale of two halves. And Marissa, like, she really kind of grew into the role as the story went on. Maybe it's because there wasn't as much of Amy to kind of go on it for, like, the earlier years. But it just, there was a bit of a mismatch. And to the point that, like, at times I actually more felt that she was doing an impression of somebody else doing an impression of Amy, as opposed to just kind of like making it her own herself. Mm. Now, later on in the film, she seems to get a proper grasp on it. But there are a couple of scenes, especially in the first half of the film, that you're kind of like, oh my God, like Amy had like some interesting like facial movements as she would sing. And as you can see Marissa doing it, you're like, it just doesn't come across as natural. It doesn't look like that's what you would normally do to sing. But then when it gets to the performance that she does for the Grammys, like that was spot on. So it's kind of hard to tell, like maybe they were filmed like earlier on in the shoot and she was still like trying to find her footing in the role itself. Or maybe that's just how she decided to do it. I don't really know. But for me, there was a massive kind of disconnect between the two halves of the film.
Yeah. And what period of Amy's life does this cover? Is it the traditional got to be famous, died kind of arc?
Almost kind of. So like it opens with a scene like she's chatting with family. They're singing Fly Me to the Moon around the house. And then it like the very next day is when she gets the call from the music producers who are like, oh, we're keen to meet you. And she's like, oh, like I'm no Spice Girl, just to let you know. And she's like, I'll think about it, and hangs up in like the cheeky Amy style. But of course, she does go to meet with them. And, you know, that's kind of the beginning of her career. So it is from basically how her career took off to how it ended, essentially.
Okay. Yeah. And the depiction of Amy herself and in... What's a way to give some kind of sense of what's going on in her head? Because it's very easy to come up with this tortured genius, you know, self-abusing person. And she's just that.
They kind of kept it a little bit straight in that sense. Like you do get a bit more insight into other different things of what was going on in her head. So like she was really, you could tell even like from Amy herself and in the film, like that she was really desperate for someone to love her. Mm. Like she really just wanted to be loved. And that ended up with her kind of always going kind of for the bad guy almost. And
yeah,
it was like she really wanted to be a mother as well. And whenever she was like seeing children around her, even though like maybe she was trying at the time, it was kind of breaking her heart. So you do get a bit more insight into some of the like emotional struggles that she was having. And actually the Back to Black sequence is actually one of the highlights for me. I thought it was really, really beautifully done, except for one scene, because you see Blake getting it on with his ex that he has gone back to, and I'm like, we didn't need to see that in this beautiful moment. But they also kind of intercut it with when her grandmother died. Her grandmother was her idol, her style icon, and like as someone who was also really close to their grandmother, and my grandmother passed away in 2021, and it, emotions. But it was one of the way they captured it was just so beautiful. and you could really just empathize. And like, yes, her grief and her situation was so different, but anyone who's kind of gone through that moment would really be able to relate to it. And I just thought that was really beautifully done. So there are moments of absolute brilliance in the film. It's just not throughout the entire thing. And it's such a shame. Like, Amy Winehouse was, I thought she was an absolutely spectacular performer and I loved her music. And I was like, this is not the tribute that she deserves. That's yeah. how I feel.
But like, ultimately, and it sounds like there's a few scenes they did really well, but did you come out of that learning anything about Amy Winehouse you didn't know already?
Not really, but mostly because I was one of those fans who kind of looked past just what the tabloids were saying about her in the first place. But there are a few people that I know, they were like, oh God, I never knew this or I never knew that. And like, I always remember seeing the pictures of her and Blake sitting on the side of the road after getting into a fight. And they actually covered that in the film. And some people were like, I didn't even know like that was real. I thought that was Hollywoodified. I was like, no, like I remember seeing that picture on the front page of the paper as a kid. Like, so there are some bits that you get to see a bit more behind the photos and learn a little bit more about like what was going on.
Yeah. It doesn't sound like it's particularly revelatory though. At the same
no,
time.
Not really. And like, I said earlier, it's like the bits with Blake, while I personally didn't know at the time how she was like getting violent with him when she'd been drinking and things like that. It has, like, she did talk about it in the press herself. But the way it's kind of portrayed is like, as much as they make a nod to how he had manipulated her in their relationship, they make a very brief nod to that. That's the end of it. The rest is kind of portraying him as a battered husband. And I didn't think that was really very fair on her memory when it was very clear that he had done more throughout the relationship.
Yeah. So ultimately, is this just a tragedy? Because, you know, when you know what the arc of the story is, I suppose there's a challenge there for the filmmaker to try and get something positive out of that tragic end.
Yeah, you kind of walk out of it just sort of going, oh man, like it gets you right kind of like in the feels. You're like, it's just so sad as to how it all went down. And like, I know there was all these questions as to what was her actual like cause of death. And it comes up on the screen at the end, sorry, spoiler alert, with what happened. And it's just, it really just like hammers home just how tragic her story was.
Yeah.
And she even says, she was just like, oh, like, I don't want my life to just be all about the music. I want it to be so much more. And, you know, unfortunately, I think her legacy is her music in the end.
Yeah. I do like films with writing at the end, though. I don't know why.
It's like, here's a little summary.
Because you just
said,
what about, right, there we go. She played a fantastic gig in Dingle for television. That's true. She was on Other Voices. And apparently that's going to be on BBC Four tonight. They're replaying it there. Dermot says Val Kilmer was so good singing the Doors songs to the movie. When he played Jim Morrison, that the other Doors members considered reforming the band with Kilmer. He was that good.
Yeah, he was brilliant.
He was, in
that,
fairness,
actually,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was, in fairness. Now, we already talked about Gladiator 2, but we're going to turn our attentions away from tired remakes to, oh no, Joker 2.
Joker 2, fully adieu. We got a trailer this week, Joaquin Phoenix back as Joker, Arthur Fleck, and Lady Gaga, Stefani Germanotta, joining him in this film. Todd Phillips, the director, has kind of come out and said, because there's been lots of rumours about that it's a musical, etc. He's kind of come out and essentially said that it's like not, but that music is essential to the film and that people will get it when they see it, which, again, not really sure what that means, especially based off the trailer. It's at one point they're doing this kind of like, they're singing together and doing this kind of cabaret show. Not really sure if they're like hallucinating that or if it's actually happening yet. Lady Gaga is playing like Harley Quinn, but it's kind of it's not a straight from the comic books, from what I can tell, because obviously if you're familiar with that, Harley Quinn was a psychiatrist that was working on Joker and then she ended up falling in love with him. She seems to be a patient at the hospital that he's in and they fall in love and then they're off doing their thing being weirdos together. So
yeah, I could see Gaga being Harley Quinn, alright. That's probably a sound.
I will be going
casting
only for her and out of morbid curiosity, but yeah, we'll see. Like, even from this trailer now, we're not really sure how it deviates from like the origin story of him or anything, but
yeah,
Yeah.
I can't remember what happened at the end of Joker 1, but he's still alive then, is he?
He's still alive, yeah.
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 Okay.
Olivia, I think you were saying, because obviously Brendan Gleeson is in this as well. We don't see him in the trailer, but you think you can hear him. We do see him in the trailer, do we?
We do see him. So basically, Andy McCarroll from Extravision, he went off and he lightened a couple of the scenes at the start. And you can see Brendan as Joaquin is being walked down the corridor as Joker. He's in behind him. So when you hear him at the start, he's going, you can hear like this voice going, wakey, wakey, banging on the door. So I was like, oh, well, clearly, if that's Brendan Gleeson, he's playing a prison guard. And then now that I've seen the shot, I'm like, boom, there he is.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and is he a prison guard?
It looks to be a prison guard, yeah.
Okay. So Arkham, I'd say,
an Arkham asylum guard. So there's a bit of confusion as well as to whether it's an asylum or a prison. It's both.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Okay, yeah. Good, good bit of investigation. Well done to them.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
Right, let's move on to the second movie of the day. It is Civil War. Here's a clip.
I didn't take a single photo. I didn't even remember. I had cameras on me. Like, oh my God. Like, why didn't I just tell him not to shoot them?
They're probably going to kill them anyway.
How do you know?
He doesn't know, but that's besides the point. Once you start asking yourself those questions, you can't stop. So we don't ask. We record so other people ask. Want to be a journalist? That's the job.
Hey, Lee.
What?
Back off.
What am I saying that's wrong?
I'm not saying it's wrong. She's just shook up.
Lee doesn't understand shook up.
Whoa. I'm not being protective of her. You're the idiot who let her in this car.
Oh my God, war is hell! Whiny millennials encounter real life. Is that the theme of this movie?
So in context, I'm kind of like, I'm Team Jesse. It's like, I would be crying in the back of the car if what had just happened to her happened to me.
Yeah.
But so basically this is a road trip through the landscape of America while there is a civil war going on. And
did they say what's caused the civil war?
Not really. It's kind of like there's been like an uprising with is it called the Western Territories or something like that, and it is Texas and California have kind of joined forces, and they're going around with this flag that's only got two stars on it, and they're the ones kind of taking it to the Capitol and causing the Civil War. Florida was trying to also get a Southern kind of uprising as well, and basically it's just all hell has broken loose across the United States. And Nick Offerman is playing the president, who is basically saying, oh no, like, we're still winning, it's all good. And it's like, no, you very much are not winning. It's like you are getting trounced on the battlefield. So all through these different like towns, they're trying to like figure out how to get from New York to DC. But like the interstates are all like blocked off, or there's been like fighting and the bridges have been pulled down and things like that. So our journalists that we follow, they are basically driving through all of these different areas, and they don't really know where the fighting is, and they also don't know what kind of side people are going to be on when they get there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like an interesting way that they're kind of like, we are neutral, we are press, we are just trying to document what's going on. But not everybody sees it that way.
Well, of course. But and they've come from New York, so they would be seen as the New York media.
So
kind of
it's
thing,
not even that they're from New York themselves. They were in New York to cover some of the riots that were going on. And in one of the opening scenes, Lee, who's played by, I'm going to make sure I don't make the mistake, Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah.
And her character Lee is like this very renowned she's this very renowned war photographer, and she meets this young girl called Jessie, and she is in her early 20s and she wants to be a war photographer, and she ends up getting kind of knocked during one of these riots. Lee kind of is checking her out, making sure that she's okay, and then suddenly you just see this woman running with an American flag in behind, and Lee just goes, get down, and the girl was actually a suicide bomber.
Right.
And
okay.
That's kind of how you get introduced to this is like they're going full tilt with the whole like nowhere is safe.
Yeah. Okay. And so when you finish watching it, what do you think the overall point of this movie is?
You're just sitting there like just with bleak outlook on life, essentially. Yes. Like, it's like the world is like the world at the moment where we're living in reality is terrible. The world that they were living in is also terrible. Mm. You're just like, where is there left to turn?
Yeah.
So that's why you just feel kind of like, ugh, at the end of both films that I'm talking about today.
But in the course of this journey, they don't talk about what caused the war, what might fix the war, how they feel about this war.
Quite neutral. And like, and here's the thing, it's like if they did talk about it, it clearly didn't register with me, which kind of is telling that maybe they didn't get the point across properly.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where they're trying to kind of like just talk about everything else around it as opposed to what's going on, which is, I think, maybe more telling of how they're trying to be more neutral in the situation. And they're like, we are just here to document. And Jessie asks Lee, she was like, oh, like if I got shot at the next kind of turn, would you photograph me? And she was just like, well, it's my job. So you have to put your feelings aside and document what's there as opposed to letting your feelings get in the way and, you know, think about like, I'm literally surrounded by these dead bodies as I'm trying to get the perfect shot. So it's like you're trying to not get shot to get the perfect shot.
Okay, right. I'm really stuck for time now. So I did mention this. There is going to be a new Running Man adaptation, Fionnuala. How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 1?
So excited.
Yeah, good. That's enough. Right. So, and Dean, finally, for the exciting climax of the show, we have two versions of Carlsberg here.
Yeah, 3.4% and 4.3%. Again, if they've done their job right, they should be able to get the flavours of these beers so close that if you were travelling internationally that you wouldn't kind of bat your eyes at the fact that the beer was slightly different.
They do taste different though.
The stronger one tastes stronger. Once you got this kind of step thing, so you know within a small range there's not a huge flavour, and then when you get to a certain point the flavour changes quite significantly. Mm-hmm. Now, you'd have a cultural thing with Carlsberg. In the UK, people would be used to, well, historically, people would have drunk beer at lunchtime. So you'd have much lower ABV beers there as styles,
more so
than in Ireland. So the 3.4% would be a more acceptable level of beer.
I appreciate the fact that you've avoided the word watery in your description of that beer. That is just absolutely tasteless muck. It really is. Dean Fionnuala, Olivia, thank you all very much. That's our lot.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.